Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi and welcome to the Snowcast. I'm your host DJ Walsh, co-host Owen Tabb.
Bada bada bing bang.
And we're joined tonight by a couple of friends of ours. So I'm going to go around the table and introduce everyone. Going clockwise to my left is Owen Tabb. Owen, what are you drinking tonight and what's your go-to drink when you're in a snog?
So tonight I'm drinking White Gypsy Pale Ale, full bodies. Sexy, foamy, frothy, bastard of a drink. I don't know what I was normally drinking, and I was snug. To be honest, I'm a typical Heineken man. Depends on the snug as well, you know, you have to feel the snug.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not a place you just go to and get a regular drink. It has to be. The drink has to fit the mood, like, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
So, I really enjoy a pint of plain, like.
Who doesn't?
And that leads me on to our next guest, Daryl Donahue.
Daryl Donahue, a.k.a. Dodd. Your first episode of the Snowcast. Delighted to be here. I disagree with Owen's point completely in the first time.
Oh, he's going straight in, straight from the nick.
Pint of plain, man, through and through. Nice creamy pint of Guinness. If you can go up to the bar, come back with a pint for £2, it's all good in my books.
Doesn't matter the snug, like, no. Fucking every no. Snug.
Well, a pint of plain fits any snug.
That's so true.
Except fucking abroad, like.
Nothing worse than a stink pint of Guinness.
Oh, Jesus.
But my point that is, I've never got a good pint of Carlsberg in Ireland. Go to Copenhagen, it's lovely. And they have this pale ale in Copenhagen called Jakobsen Pale Ale. Possibly the nicest drink I've ever had, besides a pint of Beamish in Callan's in Cork, was a pint of Jakobsen in the Carlsberg Brewery in Copenhagen. Fucking crisp out. Lovely.
And also a big shout out to Jack Cody.
Come on, Jack. Puck Filzer. He's no longer with us. Well, he's still alive, but he's no longer brewing.
Pour one out for a fall.
Next guest then is Dave Quinn, a.k.a. Big Dave Quinn, hockey aficionado here in Watford. Dave, what are you drinking now and what's your go-to drink in the snug?
Tonight I have a bit of a mouthful for you. It's
mouthful for you.
It's the Hell's Spital Lager. Delicious, crisp, tasty, just refreshing all round pint. I would have been an IPA man, and I still am, but I just, this summer, for some reason, I've gone back to just plain old, refreshing, crisp lager, and I find it's hitting the spot.
Can't beat it, like.
It's a dry summer here in Ireland as well, so like that crispiness that you get from a good, fresh, cold lager is hitting the spot this summer as well.
And I will look forward to returning to the nice IPAs and the hoppiness in the winter and autumn months to come. So.
Good autumnal drink.
Tonight I'm drinking that and I'm enjoying it thoroughly.
Lovely stuff. Yeah. Lovely stuff. So just to give you the setting, we're here in Phil Grimes Pub in Watford, the home of the Snowcast, really, I suppose we'd call it.
a shout out to White Gypsy. I'm also on the White Gypsy. It's a lovely drink. We're big fans of it here in the Snowcast. As Owen mentioned there, Jack Cody, they used to produce Puck Pilsner. They're no longer brewing. And a lovely drink. But we've replaced it with White Gypsy and we're more than happy with it. It's a lovely drink. They have a variety of drinks, but we're on the pale ale here and Phil Grimes off the tap. And you can't go wrong with it. Now, Owen, I think you have a topic for us this evening.
Topic of the show tonight that I'm bringing here is what is your most memorable sporting moment? So, kind of sprung this on the guys just before we started. So, maybe I'll start off.
Do. Man of many sporting accolades.
So the year is 2000.
Have you turned 10 yet?
I think I've just turned 10. I think
it's
my dream. Is that a sport?
It's a world event, isn't it?
They let Anton in
the
Olympics these days.
So anyway, I was on the bench for a Ballygunner hurling team.
Right.
And I got the call up from the manager. Like, I was fucking rubbish at hurling, right? I'm pretty sure this was ground hurling as well, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Around old school.
10, like, ground hurling, right?
Did you have the Wavin bosses or were the full hurls?
No, full hurls, full right. hurls. You'll know why when I tell you this story. Oh,
Jesus.
So I got the call up from the manager, right? And he goes, you know, do your little fucking warm up there, like, so. Did now run down to the corner flag, back up. He goes, right, that's enough of fucking warm up. Get on the pitch there.
Sports science in the air.
No dynamic stretching.
So anyway, I was, I think there was a throw ball in, right? So I was brought on for a man who was lining up for the throw ball. So I went in for throw ball. Ref goes, lads, you ready? Yeah, no hassle. So he throws the ball in. I fucking full on Tiger Woods golf swing, right? Right into your man's ankle. Shattered his fucking ankle. 10-year-old. And I was brought off straight away. That's my most memorable sports moment there.
Most memorable, yeah. I thought, like, you described a sports moment there. I was trying to think of sporting achievements. It's definitely a moment, anyway. Shattering a poor 10-year-old's ankle. It's no wonder you turn to the soccer.
Yeah, yeah.
A dangerous man with a stick.
Yeah, more accolades now with the soccer and stuff, but I don't think we'll beat that now. Going in and breaking a lad's ankle.
Pride of the parish.
Yeah, pride of the parish. Straight off. Don't know if I even picked up a hurl again after.
That's a fantastic story. Thanks for sharing with the group and with the listeners. Hundreds and thousands of them. So, while we're here talking about great sporting moments and currently leaning on a hockey stick that I'm not too familiar with, but a man that knows his way around the hockey stick, knows his way around the dance floor, is Big Dave Quinn. Dave, what is your most memorable sporting moment?
Well, that's a difficult one. I have many sporting achievements.
It's difficult to follow one story.
And moments that I'd like to share with you, but I broke an ankle in friendlies. I remember we have an annual old college match in my old school, and I unfortunately shattered a girl's ankle. But
girl's ankle?
Yeah, it's mixed.
That's why hurling and camogie doesn't mix.
That wasn't a proud moment. But when you were asking us earlier what was our best sporting achievement or moment, the one that sprung to mind was a team that I played for in Dublin. It's called Pembroke Wanderers. And
are they the Bolton Wanderers?
They aren't.
No.
Unfortunately.
Just wanted to clarify. Bolton lad.
Distant cousin. And
Wickham's young fella.
So in hockey in Ireland, you have the cup competitions are split like nationally between senior cup and junior cup, and this my moment comes from the junior cup. We'll be kind of a junior side. You play teams from all over Ireland. It's often
said to be one of the most difficult cups to win in hockey in Ireland, and the oldest hockey competition in the world, supposedly.
Legend has it.
And that was 3 years ago, and we had a great, great competition. Beat all around us, left, right and centre, up in Belfast, down in Cork, ended up at final in UCD, and winning the Irish Junior Cup with Pembroke was probably one of my highlights, and it will stick with me for years to come. Not as memorable as breaking a lad's ankle at age 10.
Not as intimate as Owen's story.
But we shared good stories and good memories along the way, so that's one that I always hark back to and think of fond memories.
I suppose you drank many a Hellschwita that night.
Well, actually, yeah, there's a... I remember the celebrations in the Pembroke clubhouse that night. We used to do a thing where we'd go bar diving after victories. And Sheko dived off the bar and we forgot to catch him, and he landed on the floor, dislocated his shoulder, and he still managed to make it out that night. So,
fair play to him. A different type of injury than the lads in Ballyragget felt last year, but fair play to them. Dodd, Kilnadima's pride and joy, as the songs and the tales tell us, what's your finest sporting moment or achievement?
Played a bit of underage right with the county and things like that, but I think the thing probably most proud of is college. We went to college in Dublin in Trinity, and we'd buy every 2 years go over to Edinburgh College and play a mixed rules sort of international rules match against the Shinty team over there. There's great memories there. First year, young, fresh-faced lad, only up knew no one in the college, said trip has gone on, and like, fuck it, and sign up, went over. Little did I know it'd be the biggest up of my life so far. I went over, the match, Friday, the match was on Saturday, Friday night, just out beering Saturday, all day beering, and going up to Edinburgh College, didn't know where we were going, up in the mountains, playing a shinty match, and every single one of the 15 players that we had was inebriated.
playing
the match. Felt slightly bad for the Edinburgh College parents who come out to see this hardly spectacle that had been long touted. We scored a grand total of 2 scores the entire match. The second half, or the first half, had to be drawn to a close early because we scored a goal and proceeded to sing Twist and Shout on the middle of the pitch. the referee could not get us back on the pitch, so we had to call up 10 minutes early.
He was more of a monkey's man than a pitcher's man that night.
Coming off at one stage, getting handed a can and a bottle of drinking that, going back on. One of my good friends, Thomas Mitchell, over in San Fran at the moment. Shout out to all our overseas listeners. he decided he'd take on a managerial role, mainly because he was too pissed to find his boots or his helmet, and offering parents of the Edinburgh College players chocolate biscuits to try and accommodate for the sorry state of affairs that was unfolding in front of them. But like I said, running around the shinty pitch for a good 30 minutes, maybe connection with one ball if I was lucky. This may not be up there with the final scoring achievements, was one that I remember for a long time to come.
Oh, I love it. What was the final score in that game?
I think we stopped counting after the first 5 minutes, maybe, but I'd say I'm not quite sure how it scored.
It's not about the result or winning, it's about taking part.
Participation is key.
Yeah. We definitely lost in that respect.
I feel bad for the bus driver brought you up there.
Oh, God. No, there's taxis riding, in fairness.
Taxis. Jeez, a lot of money in Trinity. Taxis, no taxis got now in UCC. Back in our day.
So Darren, we'll bring it full circle back to the main man. What's your most memorable sporting achievement?
I suppose the great thing about sport is the sense of community and pride that it brings to people, and it ties families together and ties families with families, and it unites a whole community, and mine is probably related to my family. I don't think it's a great moment, probably a shameful one, but my father comes from a family that's not bad at sport, and I was far from the fool that I am now. When I was younger, I was quite the talent at hurling and football, and my parents weren't the type of pushy parents that get involved with you when you're a young lad playing hurling. My mother went to all the matches and watched quietly. My father never went to a game, simply because the grass had to be cut, the shed had to be painted, other jobs took precedence. you know my father, he's the quintessential Irish man.
Yeah.
But we got into a league final under 14 when I was 13. So the year is 2003. 3 years on from when Tab shattered that lad's ankle. The poor lad in Ballygunner has just learned to walk again. He's finally over the brace.
3 years of rehab
later. And we're playing Middleton in a league final. For some reason, I was playing with a city club, Cork's, in Cork called Napiershiek, and we were put in the East Cork League that year. Don't ask me why. Makes no sense, like putting Galway in the Leinster Championship, playing the final in Munster. But look, it worked out for Galway and it worked out for us in the end. We won the match. But my moment was, we were playing Middleton, and my father worked in a unit in Pfizer and pharmaceutical plant. He's an engineer, and the other three engineers on him all had sons playing on a Middleton team. So the boys thought, we'll all go down and watch this match together. So I'm lining up against my father, three mates and more, their three sons. At the time, I was going well. And first ball came in, got a score. Fucking, do you know when your father's there, you're conscious of it? You look up and delighted to see him clapping, like, in your, it's actually in your head. But I'd be a bit of a hothead, like, on the pitch sometimes. Not anymore, and I'm so really calm on the pitch now these days. But back when I was 13, I'd be a bit of a hothead. Probably puberty and women and stuff like that didn't help. But. So, next ball came in. Bounces in front of me, a hurling match. I flick the ball over the fullback's head, turn him, I'm going inside, I'm rising the ball, just going through and goal. I'm about to bury it, and he strikes me with the hurl, like absolutely cleans me, and I fucking go down to the ground. But instead of like taking me free, taking my medicine, getting the ball put over the bar and continuing on the game, I get up and I wear the cunt. I absolutely wear him with the hurl. I mean, you could hear his hip bone crack. Jesus. In Ballygunner when you went back to, when that lad went back training. Like, Jesus, that poor lad never walked again after he heard the crack of this lad's hip. So not only was it the like 7 or 8 minutes into the first time my father has ever seen me in any sporting spectacle, the high wear of her off a lad break his hip and get sent off.
Oh Jesus.
But he's standing next to the poor lad's father.
Oh Jesus.
Because he works with him.
Oh Jesus.
So it's not my finest sport moment, but it's definitely my most memorable one. I think after that, my father saw me play inter-county a few times. I think he saw one club game. He saw my senior club debut when I was 17 after that, but that was the only other time he's ever seen me play sports, the only other time he's ever been interested. Me and my father are great pals and best of friends, but as far as sport goes, our mutual interest in sport ended that day. I needn't tell you what he called me when I got home. I want to follow on that. That was a fantastic question. I really enjoyed the lads around the table's answers. Like, we all come from different backgrounds, different parts of the country, and had different upbringings, and we all only met each other as adults. We all love sport, all variety of sports. I've never played hockey. I don't watch a lot of hockey, but I love talking to David about hockey. Dara comes from Galway, he's Kilnadima, Leitrim, man, through and through. Owen played a lot of soccer, played to a reasonably high level, and I played hurling in Cork and now playing Kilkenny. I want to know is, we all love attending live sport. Owen, we're fiends for the live soccer matches. Anytime we go to a conference anywhere, we managed to get 3 Premiership matches in 1 weekend out of 1 study day in London there recently. What's the most memorable live sporting moment that you've seen? I'm going to go to you, Owen, first in that scene, as we've experienced many live sporting moments together.
So I'm gonna answer your question twice. I'm gonna give 2.
Right? You from Kerry?
I know, yeah. So probably right. Serious answer here.
Yeah.
Is 2013, Alex Ferguson's last season at United, the 20th title for them. So they were playing Aston Villa at home in Old Trafford.
I know where you're going with this.
Went over with a few boys from college. In fairness, they invited me over. They'd organised with season tickets and stuff with other people they knew from supporters clubs and stuff. But anyway, we went over and I was sitting near the corner flag, only about 3 or 4 rows away from the corner flag. So I don't know if many people know, Robin van Persie then had joined United at the time, pretty much to just win a trophy.
win the Premier League.
He wasn't doing that at Arsenal, was he?
No, definitely not. So I can't even remember the other two scores. I think Van Persie scored twice. I can't remember.
He definitely scored twice. He might have scored a hat trick.
No, I don't think he scored a hat trick. But
I know the game. I know the game.
By the way, it was the game for United to win the league. So obviously that's memorable in itself. So they go on to win 3-0, but the goal to seal it, really, to put them 3-0 up, is Rooney gets the ball at the halfway line on the opposite side to me. So it's kind of, he's kind of nearly over by the...
His right wing, isn't he?
He's right wing, exactly, right wing. Yeah. Just crossing the halfway line. And he pings the ball, like this floater of a pass, over the defence.
That would have been directly in your eye line as well.
Right
where
in my
eye line.
Sitting, like,
now that you're describing it.
Kicking it right towards me. So Van Persie's running up the middle. He hits it over the defender. Van Persie catches it on the volley, left peg.
Falling over his shoulder, the ball.
Over his shoulder, left peg. Hits the top right-hand corner. And fucking just wins the league for United for 20th time. Like, hands out.
I think
greatest,
like,
one of United's greatest ever goals. And, just being there to experience that live.
Like, look, that's an amazing moment. Like, I'm a Liverpool fan, but it's a fantastic moment. And what I'll say about Van Persie was, like, he was a good goal scorer, but he was definitely one of them that's a scorer of great goals. Like, there's so many. Like, the header for Holland in the World Cup.
Oh, stop. That was outrageous.
He scored a free kick. One of his first goals at Arsenal, I remember watching live, was a free kick from the side of the box against Blackburn, and he just whipped it round in the far corner. It was an amazing technique to get that whip and bend. Like, his left foot was magic, like, to be fair to him.
Yeah.
Still is. He's still playing, like, I suppose we should say still is. That's a great one. What's your second one?
Second one then was, so I went over to London for Paddy's Day there. Could have been 2013 as well, actually. One of my mates from Waterford, Tommy Keary.
Shout out to Tommy.
Shout out to Tommy. And Rody Keary's Antiques. big shout out to them.
Hashtag sponsorship.
Just to give a little background on Tommy, he'd fucking get himself into any situation, and he'd be friends with everyone. Like, you know, you go to the races with him, and he knows, like, Harriet Bromhead or you know, he just...
We have a Tommy-based podcast coming up, actually, that we want to keep an ear out for.
But, so, Tommy's dad, or him, I don't know, are friends with the chairperson of the West Ham supporters club, like the UK West Ham support, like the actual official
supporters club, not like Green Street.
So he gets three tickets off this guy. So we end up going out to the match. Me, Tommy, and Stephen Coley ended up going out to this match anyway.
This is Upton Park at this stage.
No, this is Stamford Bridge.
Stamford Bridge.
Yeah. So
we're
in the away end. The West Ham away end for
away
this game.
Days.
Away days, right? For this Chelsea game. So we go in, take our seats. We're sitting beside the fucking chairman fella, right? Of the supporters club. All right, mate, how you getting all your fucking...
Pure Cockney.
So good. So anyway, we go over to sit down. Your man's like, get the fuck up. You fucking stand for all this fucking game. All right, fair enough, you know what we're doing, like, you know. So,
this isn't our first away. Being all of your first away.
Yeah. So, so the game kicks off, right? So, we're there, like, hands back, you know, fucking just enjoying the match. Like, next minute, like, Tommy, like, ribs me. He goes, would you have a look around you there? I say, yeah, wait, what's the crack like? He goes, do you know what's anything about the supporters? I go, yeah, well, like, they're singing the whole time, like, you know. He goes, yeah, but not a single one of them are watching the game. So the entire West Ham away fans were facing left, right, into the Chelsea home fans part, right? And they're just singing, roaring abuse. at them, right? There was two boys in front of us, and they were looking over at the Chelsea fans, right? And they obviously knew one of them, right? They were like, "Oi, Ginny, you fucking cunt, you fucking get your fucking, your mum's a slag." All this, right? So this goes on for a bit. Then John Terry didn't start, and he goes to warm up, so it goes to come on. So in fairness, fair play to John Terry, right? He comes down right down to the, goes down to warm up right down at the way end. I think Chelsea were maybe 2-0 up at this stage.
Bear in mind, John Terry started off in West Ham's academy and got poached from Chelsea then.
So anyway, he comes down to the corner flag, and he starts warming up, like, you know, and he starts doing these like toe touches, right, and like his arse just like straight up to the West Ham away fans, right. So that's the fucking end of it now, right?
The right end of it.
So everyone gets fucking their coins from the pocket and starts fucking them, absolutely pelting them down at John Terry, right? So Terry then fucking goes and gets the money and starts putting in his sock. it was absolutely like, quality.
Like. I absolutely despise John Terry's human being, but that's a fair good story.
So good.
That is brilliant. Hard to follow that one up, lads.
Yeah, Jesus.
Hard to follow that one up. Dodd, have you anything for us? Favourite live sporting moment? And you can't be a typical Galway person, Galway hurling man now, and say, when they lifted, Doughy Buck lifted the Liam McCarthy Cup last year.
Would you believe I was abroad for that. The only Ireland final I missed in the list.
You were emailing me.
Went to 2001, 2005, 2012. 2015, 2018, 2016, no, 2015, 2018. Lost every single one that I went to one time as a way. Missed that one, so I can't even claim to be at that. I was watching at 7 o'clock in the morning in San Francisco, trying to drink a bottle of beer before going out and playing a hurling match later. That's another story.
Common team riding here, Dad.
getting death threats and all, like the Mayo Priest and all this stage. the greatest. As Darren says, I've had a wide range of interest in sports. Played hurling, rugby, soccer, Gaelic football as well growing up. So it was one of the best matches I've actually ever been to. It was a soccer match. One of the lads is a big Newcastle fan, so his 21st birthday, we said we'd all chip off, go over to Newcastle, some city right now. We didn't know what we were expecting. A very fresh faced, young, naive, young Galway lads going into the big city. But went over to Newcastle playing Norwich. I think Newcastle, don't think they're doing too great that year. We go up to the match anyway, tip in. What happened? 6-1 match. So Gigi Wijnaldum with a hat trick then as well.
He scored four that day.
It was four even, right?
Yeah. Good Liverpool player.
Norwich, great Liverpool player these days. Just you're in the Newcastle corner right beside all the Norwich fans. Just the chant and the singing, just constant abuse. All them red Norwich fans, yeah. So something that will stick with me. I've very few other matches now, a few rugby challenge matches and things like that now, but nothing that can live up to Mr. Tab.
Yeah, but even at that, it's funny that both of you reference being near away fans or in amongst the away fans, and that kind of taunting each other. It doesn't happen in GAA at all. Like, you're completely mixed. Like, you buy a ticket for a terrace, you're all mixed in together, where it's actually like, you got a soccer match today, you're intentionally segregated because of, like, obviously the 1980s were a bleak time, and nobody wants to relive those days where, like, unfortunately people lost their lives going to see a fucking game of football. However, like, what you get now is you get this, like, mass group of people taunting each other, singing, and sometimes it goes all line, but, like, some of the chants are absolutely brilliant. But it's just funny that a common team is, like, the chants, the way of fans and stuff like that, and a bit of crack. That has to be had, like, doesn't it? Big Dave Quinn, you're up next.
That's a tough one. I'm actually going to reference a football match as well. And it's strange that the three stories that have already been said are football related. This story, my memory harks back to October 2015, where Ireland beat Germany in the European qualifiers in the Aviva. And it was a friend of mine that I met a couple of years ago when I was living in Vancouver. I played hockey with him over there, Johannes Stuban. Shout out to our international listeners. Johannes is he is a particular character. He makes Stuban saddles. Hashtag potential sponsorship. I've been meaning to visit him in Germany for a good few years. He's been over to me once or twice now. I need to reciprocate the visit. But yeah, he came over to visit us in Dublin and for the Germany match, and he's a fucking cocky bastard. He was over, he arrived in a big German white jersey on him. He's like, how much are we gonna beat you by today? And blah blah blah. So I had a wine and dine him before the game, and a few pints were had down in Beggar's Bush, and we went up to the Aviva, and the game started, and we rocked into our seats, anthems, and you know, emotions were flying high, and the banter has been had between all of us, and the game started, and Germany were all over us, and anyway, Shane Long was a champion of that game with that fucking cracker of a goal, and I will still remember it forever, I think, and it just rocked the stadium. Like, I've never been at a live sporting event where there was such a collective feeling of joy, jubilation, just a feeling of belonging to like this greater, this kind of almost like higher thing, where whatever the capacity of Viva was, 54, is it, or something like that, and just everyone on the same level, and joy, and knowing what that goal meant, beating like the world champions at home, like it was just probably one of the best things I've ever experienced.
What a goal as well! Like, it was like serious. What was like Darren Randolph kick out like,
and just over the shoulder, over the shoulder, and, like, top left corner.
And it's such a fucking callback to like classic 90s, like Mick McCarthy.
Jack Charlton,
like fucking route one, was absolutely horsing up the pitch, like, but. Like, he like takes it on his knee, doesn't he? I think like the ball drops over his shoulder, but I think as he's running, I think he kind of pops down off his knee,
controls it
like, as in the ball is like bouncing off the ground, bounces back up onto his knee and back onto the ground, and he fucking smashes it.
Broke the back of the net that night. Yes. And I've, as you said, Dad, like, I've been to, you know, test matches in rugby, you know, like hockey matches, GAA matches, but that moment where it was just kind of, it was the such lift, a solid memory, and
sometimes
it was one to remember.
Is this your girl here? The spittle.
Yeah, the spittle. Don't go.
It's a sniff.
Yeah, go on, have a little taste.
So. Sorry guys, I missed that. I was up ordering around the drinks, as tends to happen when you record a podcast in the snug. So I hope David entertained you guys there.
Yeah, just saying, it was the
press conference.
European. That's
different topic.
Yeah. Different topic. That's a different podcast. That's definitely explicit, aren't you?
Yeah, it was
Six Nations.
The European Championships, where Ireland beat Germany in October 2015 at home.
Yeah, the qualifiers.
That was fantastic.
That was one of the great Irish sporting moments, because they were world champions at the time.
Yeah, and I was lucky to shove it in the face of a German mate of mine who came over looking for the victory, and we rocked out of the stadium on a high.
Oliver Kahn, a hero of mine.
What's that?
Oliver Kahn.
Ollie Kahn. Stefan Effenberg, one of the best names. I just remember thinking that's one of the best names ever. And Ollie Bierhoff could head a ball in from anywhere. Like, he'd defend a corner and head it in top corner down the line. Like, and the Clinsman slide. Like, who didn't do the Clinsman slide when you were a fucking young lad? I'm lucky. I've been to a lot of big sporting occasions. Been to an awful lot of All-Ireland Hurling Finals, but when you see something and you just don't believe what you've seen, like you're literally like, what the fuck has just happened here? I've had a couple of them moments. I was lucky enough to see Phil Coutinho's last goal for Liverpool, where like it's against Swansea, he's 30 yards out, takes a touch and just whips it somehow in the top corner. Like the physics on the ball that he hits is amazing. I was also at that game, Liverpool and Watford, where Mohamed Salah scores the four goals, including the one where seven lads are trying to tackle him at one stage and he just rolls it in the corner. And I'm in the stadium thinking he's about to get tackled, and all of a sudden the net is bulging because you just have no concept of how that happened. I really had to watch Match of the Day twice to understand how he put that ball in the goal. Like, no idea. But possibly the best thing I've ever seen live. And Dodge, you will fucking love this because it's a Galway hurling moment. He sat up, lads. He's on the edge of his seat. I had him. I was lucky. I was at the All-Ireland hurling semi-final last year between Galway and Tipperary. And no, I know what you're all thinking, but it's not Big Joe's point at the end. Basically, a good friend of Niamh, my girlfriend's, her fiance, it was managing the Kilkenny Miners at the time. They were in the All-Ireland semi-final as well.
Hold on, your girlfriend Niamh's fiance?
Her friend's fiance.
Oh, friend, all right.
Sorry, I didn't care for that. My bit in the side's fiance. I'm the bit in the side, mate. I don't know.
Shout out to Niamh.
Shout out to Niamh. Yeah. Shout out to Clet Scully. Anyway, two fine-looking nurses. But basically, her Colette's fiancé, a guy called Declan Wall, shout out to Declan, from Mullinavat, was over to Kilkenny Minor hurling team. So Colette was going up to the match, and me and Eva were going to Colette, so we had really good seats. We were sitting by the benches, about 10 rows back, I'd say. We were fairly close to the action. And it's funny, I was at both All-Ireland semi-finals last year. Galway and Tipperary, which is a real intense physical game. And then I was at Cork and Waterford, which is very much a tactical game. And I was sitting high up in the Hogan stand for that. I had a great view of the tactics, so I almost felt like I got the best of both. If I'd been close to the Cork Waterford match, I probably would have missed a lot of the shape of the teams and stuff. If I was high up in the Galway tip, I probably wouldn't have experienced what I experienced. But I'd say I was about 12 feet away from this happening. And hurling's a very physical sport. There are big collisions. You know exactly what I'm going to say. But at one stage in the first half, and Galway started on fire. But Tipperary being like with the forwards they have were staying in it. But similar to this year's All-Ireland final where Limerick physically imposed themselves in the game even though they were smaller men. At one stage, Pádraic Maher, for any overseas listeners that Todd referenced earlier, hurling is an Irish sport. You have to look it up. But when you're looking it up, look up this hit. There's this guy, Pádraic Maher, plays at Tipperary. Big animal of a man. Fantastic hurler. And Pádraic Maher comes out for the ball at one stage. Where he's met by Gerard McInerney with a shoulder. The thud, it put hairs up on the back of my neck. The slap, I've never heard a collision. Like, I've seen car crashes in the flesh, and it was actually a similar kind of noise. Like, that just do you know that impact where it literally made everyone jump, and in my vicinity, jump off their seat.
Just a dead
sound. In a kind of, do you know, like you just pop up, like, oh my God. Like, he floored him. McInerney absolutely floored him. That set the tempo for Galway that day. That was it. Like, they weren't going to be beaten. Pádraic Maher was the fella that flattened lads. No more. McInerney put him on his hole. And it just drove Galway on. And I think in that second half, McInerney caught a heap of ball. Like, it was one of the best centre-back performances I've ever seen. But fuck me, like, 10 minutes into that game, when he met Pádraic Maher. And you know what that does? Like, the psychology of sport's amazing. All of a sudden, the Tipperary lads stop. They weren't hurling well, but were still putting the ball over the bar. They see the guy that's their physical imposter and backline get put in his hole. All of a sudden, it's a different challenge, and they see Galway in a different light.
It's the same thing this year against Limerick, when Gerard McInerney himself
got put in his hole, yeah. And Flanagan's not the biggest of man. Yeah. He's tall, but he's not. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That even speaks more volumes, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
Being able to,
it's all about
knock Goliath, like, you know.
And I think that, like, an awful lot of like these collisions in sports and stuff, right? You need to be strong, you need to be physically gifted. But you can have all the strength in the world. If you don't have the mental application to impose that strength, you're weaker than you. Like, it actually weakens you not having that. Like, Galway, I thought, were a bit complacent this year. And then Limerick came at him with everything. Limerick had nothing to lose. If Limerick got beat by 12 points, sure, they were never meant to make an All-Ireland final anyway.
Yeah.
It was Galway's to lose, and by fuck, Limerick lost it for him.
Sure, that was the same Waterford, Kilkenny in 2008.
Yeah.
Like yeah. that final, like Waterford weren't at the races at all. Like they just didn't show up on the day at all. And like I don't know, there obviously was just wasn't the winning mind frame or winning mentality there at the time. Like you know, as in like the boys last year thought they were going to win. Like
yeah, it's funny that Waterford team were fierce unlucky because they did literally come up against the best team that's ever been and possibly ever will be. Like. Obviously, we haven't seen that Cork team from the 40s that won 8 out of 9 All-Irelands. Mm. Or, no, they won 7 out of 8, sorry. That Jack Lynch was on and Christy Ring. But, I mean, hurling's so competitive that nowadays, and there's so many people, and it's such a fast game, that Kilkenny team was amazing. I think even that Limerick match that they won where Henry flicks the ball over the lad's head and they get the two goals in the first few minutes and they target Seamus. They put Seamus Hickey, they put Eddie Brendan on him and tell Eddie to run at him and they get 2 goals out of that. Like, that's just smart tactical play. But people have the assumption that Limerick got hammered that day. If you actually look at it, Kilkenny go 2-2 to a point up, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So they're 7 points in the lead. They win that order in the final by 6 points. Limerick actually win the rest of the game by a point. But the perception, I thought you just shook your head there, like, in disbelief, like... You know, in my head, Kilkenny hammered Limerick that day, but they actually didn't. It was just, they blitzed them early on and got the win. And I think, like, Waterford that day, the thing with that Waterford team went through such a journey together. 6 years earlier, they won the first Munster final for 30 years or something mental like that. Like, big emotion, and Waterford's such an emotional county when it comes to sport. Like, you know, they're so proud of their sporting heroes. And then they won that Munster Championship, and then... It took them 6 years to get to the All-Ireland final, and I think the occasion probably got to them that much. They weren't that bad a team, and the scoring reflected poorly on the talents that they had. It's just funny to say that psychology of sport. I think they overthought it, overanalyzed it, overhyped it.
I think that team as well weren't as much of a team as they were a collection of very good players, like very individual good players. Like,
100%.
You know, like you had absolute, like, you've like the names there, like, you know. But like, I don't know. I think the team that was there, say in last year's final, like I'd say I went to school with 8 lads.
Yeah.
Those lads won the Harty and Crow Cups.
Like, you know, played so against them. Yeah, it was fucking. So they were savage.
They're a winning team already, like, you know.
And it was funny. I played intercounty for Cork against those Waterford teams growing up, and the intercounty team actually wasn't that good. We used to beat them all the time. Yet they came through and we didn't. I think as well, when you look at that, like that's a collective group mentality. That Waterford team we're referencing in 2008, sorry. Like, I don't know, they could be the best of pals in the world off the pitch. But if you ask me, looking at it on from my memories at the time, I couldn't see Dan Shanahan and Owen Kelly going for a pint together.
No.
Do you know, they were almost in competition with each other. Whereas you know for a fact that, say, Ben O'Connor from Cork gets on really well with Timmy McCarthy, say, or someone like that. Who couldn't get on with Timmy McCarthy, a fella that smokes 40 a day and wears that bucket helmet? Do you know what I mean? I know that you're a big fan of the bucket helmets. But, you know, you can tell, like, you can tell that, you know, the Mannions are sound with the Coonies and all that kind of stuff. There's that cohesion in Galway now that there wasn't there when, say, Ollie Cannon was hurling and they used to kill each other.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, Joe was 17 and he got the ship out of him in county final. I don't think it happened in Galway now because they have more respect for each other and stuff. Whereas, like, in Kilkenny, it's savage at club level. But in the intercounty setup, they all respect each other and like, the tear strips out of each other, but there's such a respect there, a healthy respect. That's what drove those teams on. That's sports psychology. I don't know, David, how it's like in hockey in terms of...
No, like, any team sport, the psychology is going to be the exact same. I suppose it's the fact that if you want to go for a pint with a lad that's on your team, it's with that team bonding and that that's something that was really instilled in us in my club last year in Pembroke Wanderers, and it was about
Wickham's lad.
What's that?
Wickham's lad.
You know, we made a big effort to meet up as a team at least once or twice a month, collectively on a social occasion outside of training, outside the clubhouse. We go for dinner with each other. We do an activity together, and like that on that like kind of platonic level of bonding, like it makes you a stronger unit together on the field. That, you know, I've shared a great story. I don't know, on this level, I shared a great story. Shared a great few points with, say, you on top. Like, I'm gonna fucking bounce past you the ball more than I'm gonna. You know, like it's a strange thing. Like, and it's hard to quantify or justify what level or how that ups your performance level, but it obviously fucking has a huge impact on team performance.
Like, but I think it's a cumulative thing, if you ask me, in terms of if we all get on, which we obviously do, we're having a few points together, but say if we were all playing on the same team and we're socializing together and I see Dodd applying himself in training, then I'm going to say, fuck it, I need to apply myself too, because I don't want to let my mate down. Whereas if I think Dodd's a prick, I'm saying, oh, look at that fella, like, brown nose and the manager is now going hard at it in the sprints. Whereas, like, if your mates are them, you're actually inclined to go along with them.
Try to emulate, and you drive each other on.
Whereas, actually, if you don't get on, there's that snide, there's that begrudgery. And it's a very Irish thing, I'd say. I can't imagine there's much begrudgery in German sport. I can't imagine there's much begrudgery in Spanish sport.
In English, definitely.
You know, in English there is, but then again, we're not that dissimilar to the English, even though we pretend that we are, but we're actually not. I suppose just to round it off, really, really good chat there. And it was very sports focused, but I just think, like, say, I suppose a point to finish on, like, Dave, we had lunch there together about 2 weeks ago in Arkane Stores. We had an old shabbat together.
Delicious. Hashtag Arkane.
All is, yeah.
Looking for a bit of sponsorship,
Kevin. Hey, you're in the loop there.
Don't
worry,
deal with me.
If Dave's family can help us out.
Dave's mum, if you're listening to this.
Dave's mum, sponsor us with apple tarts, please. So I think we had we actually had a fascinating conversation a few weeks ago about coaching and sport.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed that, where, like, come from a hurling background, you're coming from a hockey background, two completely different sports, different completely different rules, different skill levels, some similarities, yet the fundamentals of sport are, you know, work rate, positional sense, tactical sense, and a bit of intelligence, and then the skill, you either have it or you don't. But that was really interesting. I think the psychology of sport is something that, you know, there's an awful lot more in it these days. I think they've gone too far now, where you're like, you know, you have some teams that are like, you can't go for points, you can't socialise, but you need to be in each other's pockets. Whereas you look now, like, Ireland won a Grand Slam recently, Six Nations. All those lads have a bottle of beer in their hands afterwards, after every game.
After every game.
They'd have a game in 6 days, but they're there having a few bottles together after the game.
And they're going out with the opposing team that night, like, you know, like, that's win or lose, respect, like, you know.
That's a lovely environment to create for sport, isn't it?
And, like, even, like, say, on our amateur level, like, all four of us were playing tag rugby together, right?
Yeah. Shout out to the Alele Blah. Shout out to the UHW Le Blah tag rugby team.
But
even,
like,
the pricks.
Even to bring it back there to your previous point of, like, you know, as in, you work better when you socialise together and stuff, like, as in, like, we won the our league, say, this year in tag rugby, and like we were renowned around there for being the last in the bar. We had a few bottles before each game.
Hydration.
The blabby, the blabby cue.
We had a few bottles.
We used to share. We share each other's jeans,
beds, everything. Right.
Oh, sure. Look.
But, like, I don't know. I think that definitely, like,
it galvanizes you.
Yeah, and, like, it, like, as you were saying, like, you know, as in, like, we were pulling off, like, ridiculous moves in the middle of those games, and, like, I'd say, like, 80% of the time, like, those moves were coming off, and we were tearing through defenses, like, and it's really, like, that gel that we had between one another, like, you know, as in,
you're definitely more in tune to someone that you connect with socially, that you know beyond, even in a work environment.
Yeah.
Like, myself and Owen worked together. We went to college together. We work together now. Dodd worked with us, and we socialised together. And I feel like you have that rapport. You almost that professionalism that is important, but that boundary is broken. That fourth wall is broken. And then, like, when an issue arises, it's dealt with in a respectful manner, but in a manner that's like, that just resolves everything. That happens on the sporting field, that happens in the work environment, happens in all walks of life. If you get on with someone, you work well together. If you don't get on with someone, you're not going to work well together. But part of that is getting to know each other outside of those environments, be it on the sport. Like I train hurling with lads, I probably have never had a conversation with off the training field.
Yeah.
Yet, this year, and our hurling team are making a more concerted effort to know each other better, and we're actually performing so much better than we did last year.
Can I just butt in there and I'm gonna
both
make
away.
a hockey reference again, and I'm gonna reference the success of the Irish national women's team in the World Cup just gone there this summer in London, and that's a team that went into a competition with minimal funding. I think they had the Olympic champions in their group, which had whatever it was, some incredible 7 million sterling funding per annum per the team, and the Irish hockey team had 200,000 euros to deal with to progress their program, and they ended up topping their group. But I know some of the girls on that team, and at a professional level, good mate of mine, Ali Meek, I coached with her last year, and I got to know her very well, and we shared great conversations and great coaching tips together. But
if Ali wants to come on for a snowcast, she's more than welcome.
We'll get her down here. She'd love to partake. She's great crack. But basically, what the thing was that team, albeit they weren't as technically, like, I don't know whether they'd appreciate me saying this, like, technically they weren't as good as many of the other teams there in the competition, but what they had was work rate, belief, and a work rate to work for one another, and that boils down to I think friendship on the field and friendship off the field. They knew each other intimately, and they spent so much time team bonding. They worked with the defense forces. They went on weekends away to the Curra. They explored all that other side of, like, sports psychology, and in the end, it showed. We won a silver medal in a World Cup, and probably one of the only Irish teams ever progressed that far in any team sport environment.
When do you ever hear of an Irish team making a World Cup final? You know, you don't. And I think I actually heard an interview with two of the girls. I don't know their names, and forgive my ignorance, but I heard an interview with two of the girls who played in that team that were playing in the Netherlands.
Chloe Watkins and Cameron. Yeah, anyway, yeah.
Forgive me now. Forgive my ignorance, and sorry, girls, if you're listening. Sure you are. But I heard an interview with them where they said, like, you know, when they went to the Netherlands, at the start it was tough, but they had each other, and it actually brought them even closer together. And you'd think that living and training together would actually, you'd be keen to get away from each other a bit and get a bit of space, but it actually brought them closer together. And that's massive important. We all know, like, you know, when you go to America for summer, play a bit of hurling, you want to be around the lads the whole time, because you actually end up having so much crack when you get to know each other. And you know, like, at the moment now, we're in the height of hurling season for the clubs at the moment, the way the new structure is. Like, training, you're going up there, you're keen to go, you're keen to get involved. Like, we've trained tomorrow night. I can't fucking wait to get up there and tear the skin off a few lads. And then me as well. And then we'll be best buds afterwards, like, you know. I think that aspect of sport is fascinating. Dara, you've probably been involved with that. Dara, yourself and Dave have been involved in a very high level of sport. Like, Dave, you're not far off international standard out here at times in hockey. And Dara, you've played under 21 intercounty. You've been involved in senior training panels and stuff like that. And it's a daunting environment to come into, but at the same time too, it's an environment that, you know, certain people thrive in. Like, what was your experience, Dara, in all of a sudden being immersed with the Galway Senior Hurling Panel when you first went in there as a 20, 21-year-old?
Well, so I think I was 19, just straight out of minor. I'd a good year of minor, as we lost to Waterford at the minor final in 2013. And, yeah, getting brought into the senior panel, then after that, now it's a big step up now for myself personally to really know what I was going into. But the thing that you'd find, like, most of any group, anywhere you go, some people sort of take you under the wing. I remember Shane Kavanagh, the great stalwart for Galway Hurling for years now, just go and chat to you, just the small things, like, for more and other lads as well, just sort of bring it in. I remember first thing being called, the first lad to call me Dodd, like, the nickname from home that I had from years from school and everything. Everyone else to call me Dara, but once Dodd sort of caught on, then just sort of mixing with the lads, then sort of knowing that you'd made it then at that stage, and then you're able to as Les said, like once you know people on a personal level, then you're more likely to do more for them, and they're more likely to do more for you when it goes into hurling. Like, so I think, yeah, you can never overlook that aspect of sport. You know, the more the camaraderie you try and bring back then.
But even would you say those lads calling you Dodd, you know, all of a sudden you felt at home there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You felt like you belonged there, so then you applied yourself. Not that you weren't trying hard before, but you feel, now I belong here, so I can fucking carry myself. I can do what I do naturally.
It's a belief. And, you know, it's amazing it relaxes everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know, you're going in there at start, you think you're making up the numbers, but you're like, nah, fuck it, like I'm buying into this now, and it's going to go and give them
a Jones, even like if people start giving out to you and stuff, right, you know, if someone says to you like, you know, Darry, you could be trying harder now, like with this drill or whatever, like, you know, but then if they go, Dodd, you bollocks, you know, come on, you know, hurry up there a bit, or come on the fuck, or whatever, like, you know, as in, Schnapp just relaxes everything completely, and you know, and you're actually more willing to respond to that, and you get less nervous, or you get, you know, it's less in your own head about what I'm going to do in this situation. You just fucking get on with it then, because you know the boys and they're all going to help you out. Like,
there's a reason why when my girlfriend's happy with me, she calls me DJ or DJ, and when she's not happy with me, she calls Darren Joseph Walsh. And on that bombshell, I think, look lads, thanks a million for joining us tonight. It's been a fantastic fantastic old episode. Any parting gifts for the listeners?
Like, follow, subscribe.
Like, follow, subscribe. Pass on the word to your friends. Thanks a million again to Owen Tab, my co-host, Darrow Donahue, Kilnademus, Joy and Pride, aka Dodd, Big Dave Quinn, fucking Waterford Hockey's Giant Pride. I've been DJ Walsh, and this has been another episode of the Snowcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.